City Council of Mosier, 2023-2025. City Recorder, Queen, would you like to do official roll call?
Counselor Campbell?
Present.
Counselor Estes?
Present.
Counselor Kerner?
Present.
Counselor Cannon?
Present.
Counselor Wright?
Here.
Counselor Whitmire?
Present.
And Mayor Anderson?
Present. Thank you. Full house for the first time in a while. Good to see everyone, welcome. We have Todd Reeves in the audience, and who do we have online?
Lynn Smith.
Hi, Lynn, welcome. All right, agenda corrections or additions. We've got a bunch of things to do tonight, we're trying to plow through this. One thing I would like to do is the Verizon cell tower presentation. Shannon's going to call in, can you take it?
Yes.
Yeah, when we do that, I think it might be appropriate if anyone from the public wants to ask a question or have a comment on the topic. After we have the deliberations off, we're going to plan to do that. Other additions or corrections, anyone?
Corrections in the minutes, it says in attendance.
Yeah, we didn't get to the minutes yet.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, sorry, took the gun.
But that is the next topic, so no additions or corrections on the agenda?
No.
Okay. The minutes from June 18th, go ahead.
It looks like in attendance, Counselor Estes is in attendance as well as excused, so.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, I caught that, and I want to say, really, really good minutes. And I really like the action items at the end, it's a good tally of what we decided to do, and who's got the rose pin on them. There's another little typo in paragraph 7, and City Manager Anderson, the last bullet, so it's either Andrew goes in there or Mayor Anderson. Another minor typo, the very end, last page, follow-up with the City of Dallas instead of Dallas. We've got the AI correction there. Any other comments, anyone? I'll entertain a motion to approve as amended.
Sure, I'll approve the 7th.
Move to approve?
I'm moved to approve the 7th.
June 18th?
6/18.
6/18.
Okay, got a second? Ron, second, all in favor? All in favor? Okay, all in favor, and second, great. Okay, now is an opportunity for business from the audience, any topics but cell towers?
I have.
Someone?
Go ahead. I meant to have a printout for everyone, but I was trying to do this in constraints. I've been running a little behind this week, so we better have to share. Read this real quick, very quickly, because I'm getting close to over my time. I'll read very quickly, have any questions, just interject while I comment. My comment is related to item 6A on the agenda, the floodplain ordinance. I hope you've all have read it several times, understand how it affects property owners unfairly. It completely changes the usage of residential lots along the two creeks in town. A quick summary, it limits new structures, parking prohibits having a lawn, garden, as well as maintaining or removal of vegetation and trees. Very significant restrictions. Let me give you some background on why overbearing burden does not appear necessary. This is my quick little study in the time that I had. I cannot find where these drastic restrictions are mandated by the state. It only seemed like they were some goals for the state. I could be very wrong with this, so forgive me if I am.
Sorry to interrupt you, so we went through this before one time. Because we have a hearing tonight, are you planning to be at the hearing to give your testimony?
Oh, you want me there instead? You do this?
Yeah, I think technically, Jamie's not on exactly this.
No.
No, we just have.
Jamie will be on shortly, but she's not on by now.
Will they wait?
Yeah, do you mind waiting, I'll come back.
Okay, sure.
I'm just afraid legitimately, because we have a hearing, your testimony needs to be in.
Okay, that's fine. I okay. No problem.
Okay, so anyone else
prepared?
Other business other than the cell tower and the floodplain ordinance? Anyone? See anyone on there?
No, I'm sorry. There's no public comment other than.
Okay. None of the business from the audience, so we're going to regular business. Thank you, Dr. Jason. I don't want to mess up the procedure. Okay, Shannon with us. Can you see Shannon?
Sorry, there's an issue with the sound, and I think it's Andrea may have her speaker turned off and the speaker's attached to her computer.
Shannon, are you with us?
Jane and Lynn and Ned, I woke up right here.
Okay. And
Jane.
Can
you hear?
Can you hear? Okay. So we're waiting on Shannon for the presentation on the Verizon has a proposal to put a cell antenna on the top of the Mosier Bluffs reservoir tank. And that's briefing, you got it in your packet, but Shannon from Verizon, from Urban Wireless, was to brief us on this. We're waiting on Shannon.
Yes.
You want to skip? We'll skip to the next.
I'll give a quick public comment. I think you guys can get more money.
Yeah, we'll take a public comment on it.
Well, I'm not going to comment that.
Okay. All right, we don't have Shannon. How about we'll go? Do we have Monica? Is Monica Morris with us?
No, Monica is not here.
Are you in the
meeting? Oh, she's over here. Okay, some more.
I just need to be to see if the microphone is here or open.
Are you able to hear? Yes.
So we're good to go?
Yes.
Still no Shannon?
No.
Okay. Monica, I'm going to tee you up. The resolution 2025-08 is an update on water and sewer utility rates as well as system development charges. So Finance Director Monica Morris, you want to brief us on your staff report that has a proposal on the new fees?
Monica, are you here?
Let me try. Can I just pull the speaker from the computer and see if I can take it to the room?
Here, we'll stand up.
Shannon is now on, is off the line.
Let's do Monica and we'll come back to Shannon. Monica?
All right, before you is the resolution for our annual utility rate increase. The rate increase is following the FCS rate study that the council has seen, you know, numerous years. I think we're in the last 3 years of that study. And that means the rates have gone up for sewer 1.5%, and the water rate increase is 2% based on that study. For the other items that are not reflected in that study, such as your SDCs, we're following the construction cost index of 2.6%. And then any other rates that might apply are such as late fees, that sort of thing, are all wrapped up to the reverse utility rates. And we have in our agreement that we will follow those rates. And so Hood River has those and those are posted. Any questions on those rates?
Any questions for Monica? Pretty standard. Consistent with the FCS studies a couple years ago, you said, Monica. Well, no questions or comments, thank you for your work.
How, you know, obviously with the fires and everything else happening, in this time of year, people using more water, are our wells able to tolerate heavier usage in the summer months? And is there a way to have adjusting billable cycle that adjusts for a little bit more water usage in the summer months?
Good question. My understanding is the way the rate schedule is based is on the annual use of the aquifer and the operating equipment, the pumps, and the pushing pumps, and the water. So that's already factored in terms of the capacity. In the system to work with rates. So I think that's already rolled in.
Okay. Yeah, I guess, it's tough to, I mean, our water rates, when I talk about it, people pay a fraction of what we pay for water.
Yeah.
And I partially, my grass is better. I barely water my plants.
That's part of the issue is having such a small system, economies of scale. I mean, you go to River, the Dallas, big system.
Sure.
And the cost for these.
Yeah.
Fair points. But whatever, as you all know, our emergency backup well is finally in construction. And it's going in right next to well number 4 out of Rosie Creek. So we're going right down into the same aquifer. And the hydrogeologist, when we decided to go there, several years ago with John Graham and Walt Berg, who is the expert, told us then that the aquifer should be good for 75 to 100 years. It's the precursor to deep aquifer, so we'll see. You know, our well, our existing well, it can pump 400 gallons a minute. But in any event, to answer your question, my understanding is, yeah, the fees take into account the seasonal use, lower use in the winter. Any other comments or questions? If not, would someone like to entertain a motion to adopt resolution 2025-05? Or it's actually 2025-08. Is that correct? Is that the correct number?
Yes, resolution
2025-08. So moved.
Yeah, I'll make a motion to accept the rates and approve the resolution 2025-08, adopting water and sewer utility rates and development charges.
Okay, thank you. Second?
I'll second.
Gary seconds, Lynn Meyer seconds. All in favor? All in favor, unanimous? Thank you. Great. Okay, thank you, Monica. want to go back to Shannon?
Shannon is not here.
Shannon.
Oh, Shannon, okay, you are here.
On Zoom.
Okay, Shannon, welcome. This is Mayor Anderson. Welcome. We're here to listen to your briefing on the Verizon proposal for cell antenna on our Mojave Bluffs reservoir tank. So this is the first time the council has really been briefed on this. What I'd like to do, Shannon, is have you do your briefing. We'll have the council ask questions and make comments and a little dialogue with you. And if anyone from the public has input, I think Ned may have input. We'll also entertain public input after your briefing, Shannon. So if you're ready to go, Shannon, I think all of us have your slides on our screens, and we can potentially see them on the screen above. Shannon, welcome. Please introduce yourself and go ahead. Before we entered into some long-term contract, if we were to grow that. So I don't know if any of those points, Shannon, you want to address, or I'll turn it to the counselors to, you know, have their comments and questions for you. And I guess the last thought, I think it's evident that the fact you propose to put this in the city municipal boundary, it gives you freedom from the scenic area requirements. So there's got to be a big value, I assume, to the fact that being in the city saves you jumping Verizon through the hoops of the scenic area and the regulations for new towers in the scenic area. But you might comment on that. So any and all of the above, if you want to comment back, and then I'll open it to other counselors.
So, actually, Mayor Anderson, this is Jane Crawford, and I just so quickly have a conversation.
I'm sorry, Jane, we had some watch duty people on us, going off on our phones. Could you repeat what you said?
Oh, you're good. Could I make a comment as a city planner?
Sure. Go ahead.
Alright, so I did a lot of permitting for wireless facilities when I worked for the city of Fultonville. There are a bunch of studies about radio frequencies that show that they're safe. I'm not trying to be an advocate for the applicant, but you brought up everything within the frequency that I was going to ask. Well, I think at least painting the, or doing some sort of obfuscation of the array of tenants would be beneficial for the city and the government. And also, I mean, as somebody to drive up and down 84, like, I know that's our spot that we're missing. So, as a public commenter, like, I appreciate it. I'll turn it back to that.
Well, I think, you know, a big concern, maybe, I don't know, I'm just anticipating, is aesthetics. So Shannon, talk to us about aesthetics and how you can hide the antenna or paint certain colors, or can it be small? I noticed on your diagrams, 10 feet on top of a 24-foot tank, I think. You know, so it could be pretty intrusive. So, Shannon, talk to us about that.
So, as far as aesthetics go, the photosynths that you received in the packet show the antenna configuration that we are looking for, that we need to operate to be able to project the signal for data, voice, texting, all of the good stuff that people are using on their phones. That is just a raw look at what the antennas look like. What we could do, if having a site is of interest to City Council, so we could propose to paint the water tank as a concrete tank, so it could be painted very easily, and then we could create a RF transparent shroud that goes around the antennas that is attached to the top of the tank. We have to do a little bit more research with city engineering as far as what the tank is made of and what we could do to actually attach the steel to without compromising the tank. So we can come up with different renderings of what is proposed. We can get some information from engineering of what the actual tank is. If you can't just attack me. In the Portland market, we've been using things like magnetic welding to steel tanks, or not welding, just bags. And that can be used in this application because it's a concrete tank. So I can work with our stealth division and find out something that would be more visually appealing. That's something that we can definitely come back to you with, and not an issue. Your question about EME as far as electric or magnetic emissions, we run what's called an air report, NIER, and that shows a plot map of what the radiation would be from those antennas, but there are no habitable spaces immediately adjacent to the tank. There are residences down below, I understand that, residences. And if you think about it, these antennas we attach all the time to the exterior of habitable buildings. So we can provide reports that show what these antennas are projecting or not outside of the FCC guidelines by any means. As far as the lease rate, we are open to discussion on that. First shot over the bow, have to start somewhere. Same with the escalation. Verizon will not sign a lease that exceeds 3%. I propose 2%, so you could ask me if you could call somewhere in between. Other questions that you had for the NSA. We didn't look into the NSA because we need to cover Mosher, downtown Mosher, the community of Mosher, and also that section of 84 that goes through there. So we have not explored beyond to do a new tower within the NSA, but we do towers all the time in the NSA. So that is not an issue. It takes longer, but that's not a drawback for us. There's height limit issues, which is why we need to look at water tanks first. And visually, those are less obtrusive than us creating something. And we also wanted to approach public property feet so that the community would benefit from the inbound revenue of an individual person.
Okay, thank you.
Like facts, rapid fire.
So what she just to help? I was just going to visualize her antenna. Those antennas are highly directional, and so what she's saying is that beam that's coming out is going to be, you know, visualize it like this, so it's going to shoot over the houses because it's trying to direct out to a farther location. Some radiation will be down there, but maybe similar to what's, you know, half a mile away or more. Yeah.
Thank you. You do have a resident expert, Todd Reeves, who's a wireless guru, so thank you, Todd. So, other comments, questions, councilors first, and then we'll go to the public. Charlie.
Given that that's a good location for an antenna, would there be a way in which it could be shared if down the road AT&T or T-Mobile wanted to equally share that space for their antennas? Would that be applicable?
There's not enough room on top of that tank. If you were to build a tower, you could share a tower, but we are proposing to occupy the top of the tank. That's a very small tank. So if we are putting in 3-4 sectors, there's not enough room for an additional carrier to go on top of that tank. It is only one carrier facility.
Okay. Other questions, comments? Ron?
Is it possible for the antennas to be, excuse me, hung along the side of the tank, or do they need to be above it to function correctly?
We don't attach to the side of water tanks because it compromises the tank itself. And at 24 feet, we're fairly low. Usually our sites are at least 50 feet. So higher gives us a better broadcast range. So this tank has two issues. One, we can't really attach to the side of it because it doesn't have a catwalk or a handrail around the top. So if you go into different areas, different jurisdictions, you see antennas attached to tank handrails. But there's no handrail there. It's a concrete tank. So we have to go on the top and also to get the additional height.
Thank you. Others say before, go ahead. No.
I wanted to ask about the 25-year lease. What are the implications for, this is in the 5-year term, so I'm assuming that means that anything can be canceled or renegotiated after the 5-year term. The other thing I wanted to ask was, in regards to the 25-year lease, what would be the expected outcome of the lease expiration? Could we expect that you guys would renew it, or, I mean, I know it's kind of hard to say because I think technologically things have changed in 25 years, but yeah, I guess I'm just curious what we would expect after 25 years.
You were cutting out a little bit, so I couldn't understand what your questions were. Is there someone else who
at the end of the 25-year term, what would happen?
We would have the you and Verizon would have the ability to extend it. In 25 years, we don't know what wireless use is going to look like, if we're talking into our wrists or what that's going to be. So this is a kind of negotiation.
The other part, the other part of Councillor S's question was, after a five-year period, do we have the ability to cancel or renegotiate? Is that correct?
That's correct.
That's correct.
No, it is. We will spend upwards of $1 million to install an antenna site here, and so there are not cancellation policies available until after the third term, which would be 15 years.
Well, listen, let's. I think there's members of the public. I know Ned, you're out there, and you're oh, sorry, Ned. I'll come to you. We had one more council question. We can go back, Council, too, but go ahead and leave.
What is the plan for both property maintenance as well as tank maintenance, and how that would affect the cell tower as well as vice versa? Because at some point, I'm sure crews are going to need to get in to look at the tank, and I would look for maintenance, shut everything down. Is that going to become a bigger issue because we have to have a Verizon crew on site as well, and how is that going to look?
So we have the ability for you guys to call our National Operating Center and schedule a scheduled outage if there has to be maintenance on the tank, and if you feel the people who are doing the maintenance on the tank are standing in front of the antennas, we can turn the cell site off. Just the flip of a switch turns it completely off. So the maintenance can be done on the tank, and then when they're done, they call the phone number, we turn it back on. So there's no RF exposure to the people who are on site when they are doing tank maintenance.
What's the time? What's the time frame of getting that turned off? After, when we call, how much of a lag is there before we're actually able to access the tank?
The question was about access to the tank?
Well, what kind of lead time would Verizon need in order to accomplish a shutdown? Say the city has to get in there like an hour from now.
Shannon, and the rent on that tower is $4,000. So you're
can I just comment on that, just to be clear, so everybody understands? What you went through was Moser Bluff Homeowners Association, CC&Rs. That was not in any way a city requirement in terms of, you know, your siding and your color and so on. That was Moser Bluff's, which is a different set of regulations in the city.
Okay, I stand corrected.
But your point, I think, you know, your point is still a fair point.
The point is still valid, I think.
Yeah. Okay, anything else, Ned? I want to move along.
Sure. Shannon, I would be very willing to meet with you to have an architect. I would be happy to meet with you to design something on top of that tower that would hopefully contain some EMF and is less obtrusive to me being 30 feet away.
Okay, well,
I don't live close, but I was about ready to say thank you before Ned, you said something, was that were any property owners that were adjacent, were they directly notified? Because I found that the city might pass things before we didn't realize that the property adjacent. So I was
going to
ask that question because that's common courtesy of the city before adopting new things.
So, I looked at
this
about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. So
Jane, just let, again, I mentioned this at the beginning here. More public involvement in our, this is the first presentation we've had. I did notify Ned, I did notify another neighbor up there. So we're trying to do this in a fair, objective, and well-notified process.
Okay.
So, we don't have to belabor this.
I'm sorry, Mayor.
Who is that?
Jamie Crawford.
Okay, Jamie, go ahead.
So the city actually does have a wireless code. It's chapter 1511, and I'll provide that to the applicant. But it has existing details, so there are certain aspects of it that are not the kind of aligned with the new federal regulations under the Florida or something. But I can provide that to the council, I can provide the applicant, and they will stop talking to me.
Yeah, just to be clear, James, to James' point, we are far from making a decision here. This is early preliminaries. Don't anybody think, you know, we're about to jump into a legal agreement with Verizon. We have more work to do. Listen, let me propose a way forward. I don't think we're ready to say no. I don't think we're ready to say yes. I think there's more homework to be done. The EMF question, the aesthetics question, the engineering operation of the tank question, the lease amount question. Well, what I would propose, Shannon, if you would like to do this, is we do some more work, staff does some more work with you, James involved in the loop, certainly Andrea and others. Here's a question for you. Shannon, it costs us money every time we have to look at something like this. For us to pay our city engineer as a consulting engineer costs money. If we ever get to the point of having a legal agreement, it's going to cost us money with our attorney. Shannon, are you willing, is your client, Verizon, willing to consider on a reimbursable basis or upfront basis absorbing some of those costs that we would be exposed to actually run this to the ground to a final decision?
Yes, we do see that in smaller communities. Because you don't have the budget to go down the road of what I'm proposing. So, yes, if it becomes a question of reimbursing for the fees that you incur or if
Okay, well, how about this, Counselor, see if he has agreed. How about Andrew's got the task to work with Shannon and Stoner, Jamie, what have you, and really drill down to these questions that we teed up, including EMF, aesthetics, structural issues, operational issues, legal issues, liability, lease amounts, inflation factor. Let's put some more detail on all of those questions and bring it back for another discussion, Shannon. And at that time, we will do an all-come public meeting. And Shannon, we would ask that you and your clients necessarily come to an in-person meeting. So, you know, all in the public are fully aware and informed of what the trade-offs are, what the value is. You know, obviously there's pros and cons here. Does that make sense, counselors?
Okay, yes, and also Shannon, in our previous conversations, you said that you do have an EMF expert that could come and speak to that.
Yeah.
So if I could say something on Jamie again, sorry. Shannon, if you, the grid, the first step to all this is having a pre-application meeting with myself and Brianna Witt, if you want to be involved, you can open it to the public if you like. And then during that meeting, and then you will also be asked to sign that consent to control the cost agreement.
So
something, it seems like you guys are at that point during the past discussion. So I feel like that would be a perfect.
Yeah, absolutely. Today's presentation was just a, hey, are you interested? Or city council said, we are all against this kind of bank going, you know, that's where we would be at. So today was gauging interest. Do you want to hear more? Or do you want to put it to bed? So if you would like to hear more, I'm happy to go down the path of the pre-app, and we can keep talking.
So thank you, so Jamie, just to recap what I didn't hear anything, what you proposed is these details would be worked and brought to a pre-application meeting that would be open to the public. Is that the bottom line of what you just said?
Yes, that's correct. I'm assuming that the applicant would be on Zoom. I'm sorry, Shannon, I don't know where you are.
I just had a conflict. I was ready to come last week, but then the meeting got postponed, so I just think we need a different seat. So I can come for any meeting, most likely.
Well, yeah, no, I'm not sure.
Okay, we need to move forward.
So, yeah, the first step would be the tree map meeting, and we can run test that. I can coordinate with Amy. It would be open. But not necessarily something that the public could comment on, but they're able to join the discussion and hear about everything.
Jamie, we'll take further discussion offline from the council meeting. The bottom line here, I'm looking at council members. It's not a yes, it's not a no. We have enough interest to pursue this further. And Shannon, we take you at your word that our costs can be recovered within reason, because otherwise, you know, this is a sinkhole for us, you know, spending money for something that maybe doesn't go out of its benefit. So we'll go forward, and Andrea's got the lead for the city. Shannon, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it. And you're welcome to stay for the rest of the meeting if you like, or you're welcome to tomorrow, and we'll keep talking to you more in the future. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Good discussion. Recreational immunity, is Laura Westmeyer with us or not?
She is not with us. We're just doing a second reading of this recreational immunity by title only in order to adopt it.
Yeah, so you recall that Laura brief us on this, the new legislation. This gives us a great opportunity to protect ourselves from sharp challenges of injuries on our property. So, any discussion here needed?
I actually have a question. I remember our attorney, she had this discussion with us, and then the proposal for the bench down on the launch site. Does that fall into, like, is that still technically on city property at that point? Like, I kind of remember there was a little bit of a discussion of it, but I don't think there were any really clear ideas of where that bench would be.
So I met, as we did during that meeting, I met with Anna Marie down there. We looked at the site. Meanwhile, I did some homework and looked at the GIS maps and where the proposal is, the bench, which I think makes sense, is what we talked about. It may be on state parks, but it's like, you know, it's hard to tell because the granularity of the mapping isn't good enough for it to tell, but I have to go show you down there. Go on the GIS map and you can see where the city property ends and then it's park property and then it's, you know, no man's land out there. So anyway, but I think back to the unity provision of the code, would apply to us. So, would anyone chair to do the second reading by title only? Any volunteers, counselors? Ron's got a volunteer. Ron's going. Good. Okay. Well, so you have to read it by title only.
On the script, there's a script file.
I have a hard copy, so I'm going to use it. It's got all the things. I appreciate you.
Adopted on July 16th, 2025. It's the 23rd today, isn't it?
Yes.
And so that would need to be amended.
So, as amended. So I have a second. Ron's motion as amended by Gary.
Second.
Noah seconds. All in favor? All in favor? Great. Thank you, Ron. Thank you, Gary. And you'll make that correction. Good. Okay. Excellent. That's a good step forward. Okay, moving on. Second reading on adopting the short-term rental amendments to our ordinance on short-term rentals. Do I have someone willing to make a motion and do the second reading, just like Ron did in the Board of Regional Unity? Anyone? Okay.
I can do that. That is also ordinance 202.
Yeah.
I move the council approves the second reading by title only and adopt ordinance 202. And the ordinance title is an ordinance of the city of Mosier adopting amendments to the operational rules and licensure requirements for short-term rentals.
Any discussion? No, got a second. Sorry, Jen, second. All in favor? All in favor? Dylan, good. You abstain? Okay. One abstain? Maybe you're in favor? Yeah. Okay. One abstention? Okay. Passes? Thank you. All right. Good work. Okay. We're now moving to the public hearing portion on the floodplain ordinance proposal. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, thank you. Sorry, I missed myself. Approval, removing, and changing signage on the Unco back to now. And what do you?
We just needed to remove Acacia Berry and add, as a signer, we currently have Brenna and Ron as signers. We have the two. And then approving Monica Morris, who's the finance director, and myself at online access for transactional review and downloading statements.
Okay, do we need a motion to approve?
Yes, please.
And so move to approve?
So move.
Larry, second?
Second.
Lady, second, all in favor? All there, yes, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Jamie Crawford, are you still with us?
Yes, Mayor, I'm here.
Yeah, good, thank you. Okay, so I'll see if I can tee this up. So now is the set time for the purpose of considering the land use application adoption of the FEMA floodplain regulations to meet state mandatory deadlines for adoption. The criteria which must be satisfied for approval of this action are listed in the city staff report. Public testimony must be directed to those criteria or other criteria in plan or land use regulation, which are justified and legal to apply to the decision. Failure to raise an issue accompanied by statements or evidence sufficient to afford the decision makers, applicant, or staff an opportunity to respond to the issue concludes an appeal based on the issue to the Oregon Land Use Board of Appeals. So the public hearing is going to be conducted as follows. Staff, that's Jamie Crawford, will provide a report briefly summarizing the application, any public testimony received prior to the hearing, the applicable decision criteria, and staff's recommendations. Then we will take testimony for persons in support, people that opposed, or people neutral about the proposal in that order. The testimony portion of the hearing will be closed, and then we decision makers, which is the council members, seven of us, will deliberate. If you're testifying, please state your name and address for the record. Keep testimony concise, addressing the applicable decision criteria. So at this point, the public hearing for FEMA floodplain regulations is now open. The staff, land use planner, Dean Crawford will now present her report, any public testimony received prior to the opening of this hearing, and staff recommendations. So over to you, Jamie.
Thank you, Mayor Anderson. So what is before the council this evening is essentially the Oregon model floodplain ordinance.
Jamie, pause for a second. We're gonna try and make the sound better here. It's a little difficult to hear, so hold on a second.
My son is going to bounce back.
Okay.
There's no way to stop.
There
is that it appears that there's two meetings happening, because she has Monica and Jamie and others, and I have, now I have Jane Lynn on my, so we are, you know.
I don't know how there's.
I think that's happened in the past, potentially as well, somehow.
So can we shut one of them, or are we gonna lose?
Can they just join your meeting?
Yeah, can Jane and Lynn join on rejoin?
Oh, that's.
Jane and Lynn, can you hear us?
Yes, yes.
If Andrea turns her computer off, we probably lose you. Can you rejoin and
I will attempt, yes.
And then see if they go to you.
Which of you guys can I call with my questions?
You can call me. Yeah.
Great.
All right.
I will.
Thank you, Jane. Thanks for your patience.
Hey, got a button. Yeah, 30 seconds.
Okay, when you're off, and Amy, we're going to listen in through your speaker. So are you off?
I'm not, but yes, they do enjoy it in a different way, because if I can.
Amy, you're recording this, mm-hmm. And so we need to record it.
I'm not quite sure what
meaning. So turn your voice on. Go unmuted, Amy.
Okay.
Jamie? Jamie Crawford, can you hear us?
Jamie, are you able to hear us?
Can anyone hear us?
Yes. I can hear you. I'm sure she'll be right back. But this sound is much better now.
Is that Jamie?
That was Monica.
But I doubt you guys can.
And she said that the sound was much better.
But if she's.
Jamie was, I think, in a.
Oh, that's not so good.
Yeah.
You point this sound, so that's not
good. That's not why the sound is only.
Let's
bear with us just 1 second. My computer speaker is not loud enough for everybody to hear. Bear with me.
If Andrea joins where Monica and Jamie are, then that would
be. That's what I was trying to.
Yeah.
You shut down my brain.
I did
send you a link to the one where we are. Everybody else is on.
You signed in before.
Yes. Yeah. And which did you send it to the England now?
It is in.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear us?
Yeah, it's really clear. It's so clear.
Is that Jamie? Okay, Jamie, I think we're good now.
Recording in progress.
Is that Jamie?
Yeah. Okay.
I love the reverb.
So we lost Lynn and Jamie.
Essentially,
Jamie,
so right now, the
city is left.
Yeah.
Jamie, start over. We can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead. I think we're good. We don't have Jane, but Jane's going to call in with questions.
That's awesome. I did send her a text message with the link to call in. The passwords and everything. So essentially, the flood plain regulation currently lives within Title 13. It's 13.10. It's the same sort of title that building codes are under, which is great. It's outside of your zoning code, and so therefore, actually,
regulation for floodplain management. This essentially came out of a 2009 lawsuit that the Portland Audubon Society filed against the federal government, and some other actors joined on the board, and there's been a lot of court battles back and forth. And then in 2016, I think it was the Supreme Court basically told Oregon, like, hey, you gotta fix your regulations. And then things were kind of put on some pause, COVID happened. Anyways, so all of this is to say that the new regulations that are for the county are one of the three options that the state of Oregon and the federal government has given jurisdiction. So the first option was to,
I just jumped on. This is Katie talking for that. I'm on this line now, so I just wanted to understand how I got to here. Who's talking? Is it Jamie?
No, you're here now.
So,
Deal to be department, or planning rules, or administrative rules, anything we can think of. But the caveat is that this ordinance, when it is adopted, if the city council chooses to do so, it'll go through review with FEMA and with DLC, and they have a checklist, like down to the lane. So we can't really change anything within the ordinance itself because it's been vetted by everybody in the lawyers. So what is before you right now is a repeal of your previous language for floodplain administration and the adoption of these new regulations. And in these new regulations, not really changing your previous language. So individuals that are within the floodplain, if they want to build a structure, they can still do that. They just have to submit an application, which is not a land use action. It's actually a ministerial action. So Andrea could assign it to the city engineer, just to, run their calculations to show what the federal government and the state are calling a no net loss of flood storage. So essentially, you just need to make sure that the water that you're displacing with your replacement would be captured in some sort of way on the site. It's not like stormwater replacement, but the three are included. So it's not a development moratorium, but essentially, it would function as a building permit, which is something that the city already offers. So, with that, I will open it up to you for a whole discussion and questions.
Jamie.
Is this when I put that question?
Jane, excuse me, let's have council deliberation. We'll give you an opportunity.
Wait. Oh, Nick, I'm sorry. I
couldn't
give you the.
Can you hear me?
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, super echoey. I heard Jamie clearly. You're super mid. Yeah, okay, I'll shut up.
Just tell me. Yeah, sorry. Dana, we'll give you an opportunity and Todd.
That's me. I apologize.
Rebuild it after it's burned down. No.
Okay.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I want to just keep it crisp. You're doing good. Go ahead.
Yeah, so the first option is what the state and federal government is calling, quote, the biological option. So that means that you put the burden of proof on the applicant to they need to hire an environmental engineer or a environmental scientist or a wetland scientist or some sort of habitat, whatever, to create a report that shows that they are meeting X, Y, and Z. So it's a permit by permit basis, and the estimation of that cost for somebody running through for the floodplain permit would be roughly around 25 grand.
Okay.
And then the third option is the one that I'm suggesting that comes about. It is this model ordinance directed from the state of Oregon that the language can't really be changed or manipulated, but it provides the city engineer clear direction. All we have to do is, I'm not the city engineer, but hey, so all they have to do is like punch in calculations to, you know, their rent up for them to pop out whether or not they use the word method.
Okay.
So I finish.
Yeah, thank you for that. That's helpful. Here's a question. The two areas that this would apply to in Mosier are the lower end of Mosier Creek and then the lower end of Rock Creek by the sewage treatment plant. Is that correct?
So, yes.
So answer the question of what lots or residences could be impacted by the ability to have floodplain insurance or the inability to have floodplain insurance. For example, is that Kathy Fitzpatrick's house? Is it the wastewater treatment plant? I've seen the maps before. I'm just trying to drill down for council so we understand what the implications are and what the trade-offs are. Follow?
Yeah, no, of course. So the notice that we found to property owners, all right, I'll back up. So the county is, they have been in the process of updating their FEMA floodplain mapping, and it's actually more accurate than the floodplain mapping that was available. 1987 or whatever they, you know, took a giant crayon and decided to draw a line. So the update mapping is based on LIDAR information as well as green flow improvements and downstream for how much of the creek or rock creek are, you know, flowing into the Columbia as well as the dimensions of the Columbia. So the updated mapping is not actually in front of the council for discussion. You guys are, it's already been adopted.
Right, but I'm just trying to understand which properties get impacted by a decision one way or the other here. Can you follow?
Or rather,
can
you get
more?
To be honest, I cannot give you a solid number on which structures and which properties would be impacted.
Okay.
I asked our GIS team to look at the previous mapping and then look at the new mapping. And anybody who was not included in the previous FEMA floodplain but was now included in the new mapping is a notice to be in the same
we'll stop that line of questioning. I'm trying to understand, at risk is floodplain insurance. That has to do with 100-year floodplain, which is the subject of the new mapping. There's some maps out there. But let that be as it may. So maybe let's turn to counselors. If counselors have questions of you, and then Jamie, if it's legit, what I'd like to do is that allow Jamie and Todd and anyone else to ask questions as well as council members. Can we do that in the hearing?
Of course.
Okay. So
yeah, yeah, yeah. No, that's fine.
Jane, I want to go to council first. Yeah. Let me go around the table and then we'll go to the public, please. So, council, do we have any questions?
I'm sorry.
Just wait your turn. I'll come back to you, okay? Okay, no.
I do think I can help Jamie's.
I wanted to ask about the variance procedure.
Jamie, can you hear Noah?
No, I'm sorry, Noah. I didn't hear you. Do you mind speaking up?
Of course. I wanted to ask about the variance procedure and our abilities to grant a variance to individuals. I was viewing earlier, and that process didn't seem super clear to me. I guess I'm kind of curious, can we do that with the legal protection of the property owner, or is there a way we can do that which allows the property owner to independently forego their ability to claim this insurance?
I'm going to repeat the question back to you for clarity. So you're asking about the various procedures within the floodplain ordinance, and if that individual does not go through the permitting process, if they are able to claim and apply the insurance, am I correct in that?
Think so. I think what I'm trying to ask is, if we were as the city council, my understanding is as the city council, we can grant a variance to an individual who owns a piece of private property. If we were to do that, what is our liability, and are we able to grant a variance or give some kind of option to a property owner so that they can have that variance and kind of keep ourselves free of the liability and maintain the ability to keep our insurance for most of the city.
Yeah. Okay. So, what is the city's liability for granting? So, what's interesting is I have worked with Dan Meter for last year and a half ago, and in his 55 years of land use applications, he has never approved a marriage. However, I mean, I know that's still nonsense towards the city of the council, but it's completely easy to meet the no net loss for a calculation. And so it's not something likely to come before you guys. However, because what the city is adopting is we're out of the ordinance, floodplain, the remodel ordinance. It's embedded by land use attorney, you guys would be in your right to the support that sort of decision. So I don't see really any liability from the city because it's a pretty yes, no check mark whether you go down one path. And then if somebody is looking for a variance, then the burden of proof is on that applicant. And so it wouldn't be the city's liability. It would completely be on them, and any sort of application that included a variance. Andrea, Amy, I think so. We've actually made sure that it was elevated to the council, to your city attorney, just you know, we don't get it, uncharted territory. But really great question, Noah. Thank you for bringing it up. And thank you for reading the ordinance. Thank you so much.
Charlie.
What's the deadline in which we need to make a decision on this with?
So actually, the deadline was technically yesterday. However, associates of mine have been in contact with the VLCD, so like the planning arm of Oregon. They are the administrator of the National Floodplain Insurance Program, and they are so far behind on checking jurisdictions and make sure that they're following through, that PFAS would be a reasonable timeline for adoption to occur before the end of July. So,
I guess
until the end of July.
Yeah. My worry is that our ability to hear you clearly is muffled. Our ability to see clear maps is inaccurate or indescript, and that's like shooting in the dark, in my opinion. And my house sits in the floodplain, so I know I have to recuse myself, but still, for the way in which this is going down, it seems unauthentic to proceed with.
Your house sits in, or your property?
My property.
Yeah, too. So the biological limit loss would apply to you if you want to do something down.
Well, and that's where I need the detailed maps and the description of what this is actually talking to or not. Talking about words and verbal, we need some maps.
Other council questions, comments? If not, let's do a round with Jane and Tom. Jane, we'll go to you, and let's take this as questions for our planner, for Jamie, as opposed to testimony in support or opposed. Does that make sense, Jane?
I would focus more on that.
Okay. I actually was prefacing my question with, now that I'm presuming a support for the council to vote on the third option. And then, as the landowner, my question, I tried to read everything and understand it, and the permit asks or arguing is what is in determined to be in the floodplain, which part, which equals all, then there's a question. So then the interesting thing about the designated 17 people is that if we realistically look at how things are going to flood, the 17 people, of which myself and, you know, Charlie, we're not going to flood, however other people are going to flood. And so then the question is, who are we going to ask for studies of the raising Columbia to determine who really is in the flood? And if we are in a situation of adopting federal guidelines to get who is determined, it seems to me, which I didn't know before tonight, and Jamie, you've been really helpful in sending me information, what I'm hearing you say is that gives some determination by the city to determine who can get permit based on this, because the truth is 17 people were issued this warning, and many of us 17 are not going to even flood. However, other people are going to flood. So who determines who's going to have this arduous process of permit if there aren't same people at the heart of our government deciding that for us? So hopefully that.
Yeah, Jane.
I'm one of the 17.
my hoping that is I didn't know that fully understood the three options. I think number three makes full sense, which is we as a city take on the responsibility to look at each individual case and determine the fair outcome for all, for everybody. And I think that I go for that.
Yeah, Jane, just to, I think I hear what you're saying. You're talking about the city engineer's got the job. What are the specifications and criteria he or she?
Wait, I'm so sorry. I can't hear. Really, I'm going to hear you.
Okay. All right, thank you. I think we got your point. Talk.
No, 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 Jane, you're great. I heard you loud and clear. So the floodplain administrator is going to be the manager, so Andrea. And she has the right to designate who is going to do the review. And so it makes sense for the city engineer to go through it. I'm not an engineer, I don't have a license, so it's not really within my wheelhouse.
Creek subvasion total daily load management data. So just give me my papers back because it doesn't quite relate to this.
Are you talking to me? Yeah?
Yes, that's
total
what.
Maximum daily load?
Yes, I think I have the wrong data.
Yeah, you're.
That's what I.
Yeah, I have
you guys are all new. This is all a little new to me here. So.
TMDL is a totally separate.
This is more related to that. We're not dealing with that tonight, apparently. Well, I assume this applies to me since I got the notice, but I have no other data, so I don't know what.
So you don't care to testify on the floodplain ordinance?
I would like. So I did the. Notice said floodplain, so I start researching that. There's no data for a floodplain here, so I don't know who, you know, federal-wise, I don't know where the data is coming
that's
from.
Charlie's point, and I think that's right. Okay.
And I've lived here 55 years, and I've seen multiple floods that washed out multiple bridges. It never came up and washed out any houses except for the lowest down here.
And that's part of our problem, is understanding.
That's right. I
Yes. And that's the floodplain mapping that Jamie's talking about. Jamie, let me propose something. I don't believe we are ready to to, we're not in a crystal clear understanding of what the implications are, the trade-offs here. I think we have to do more homework to really, really boil this down into what we're talking about in terms of pros and cons. Can we extend the hearing to another date and we do some more homework in between so we can answer some of these basic fundamental questions? Where is the floodplain? Which properties apply? What historically have we issued in terms of permits or variances, what have you? So I think there's too much confusion. I'll admit, I'm frankly confused. I think we all are. So, Jamie, is there a way, can we defer the hearing or extend the hearing, or can we just put our seat to both of us? Go ahead.
Right now, what is before the council is simply the regulations. Not necessarily the mapping. The mapping is already studied. There's already studies for the county I think they were published in 2022. And so that is not on the table for the tribal development. However, one of the implications for not adopting this week is the potential for not being involved in the National Flood Insurance Program. So, what I would suggest the council does is adopt. And then we can, meet that benchmark and if the council wants to walk things back, it's easy to walk it back. I've been working for the city for the last year and a half. I have yet to issue a floodplain permit for you guys.
Right.
So it's not like they are very likely. A reason why I've been directing jurisdictions to have them outside of their development code. And so that we do not have to go through the notification process of the state. It lives in Title 13, not Title 15, which is the zoning ordinance. And so there are a lot of lawsuits that are still happening. So these regulations could essentially disappear tomorrow. But as of right now, I would urge the council to be on the more discerning side and just take the state and the federal government out of our hair. But it's really up to you.
So you're saying adopt, and then if we have concerns, then we have buyer's remorse, we can walk it back later. But
yes.
That may be a viable strategy, but here's the thing. Again, I don't think we really understand the implications. I get your point. We probably have never issued a permit in this city. I bet we've never issued a permit for people doing something down along the creek outside of their structure in the floodplain, because they wouldn't be able to build a structure in the 100-year floodplain anymore, right? So this may be much ado.
Can you guys hear me?
Jane, hold on. We're having a council discussion here, please. Jamie, that is
not. I was going to say, I.
Go ahead.
No.
I'm sorry. Jamie, my concern, Jamie, is this could be much ado about nothing. The implications here may be riff next to nil, but I don't think we have enough information before us to actually determine that. Gary, go ahead.
If we adopt this ordinance tonight, are we locked into one of those three options, or can we pick which option we decide on after adopting this? Because it sounds like that the push tonight is to adopt this in order that the city can stay and have floodplain properties insured.
Yeah. Right. Which is right. That's the
which
risk.
Is that's
what we're risking.
Especially with the tax down by property.
Yeah.
Those ones.
Yes, yes. It may be Kathy Fitzpatrick's house, for example.
Yeah. We don't.
So I'm so sorry, Mary Anderson, to address your question, yes. So if the city council thought that the buyout option or the no development option was more appropriate, then yeah, we can totally walk it back.
Okay. So,
but right now, the council is risking is not being included in that federal fund.
Yeah,
there are insurance agencies that offer supplementary, but not like the federal government.
Right. What we don't want to do is end up denying somebody that needs floodplain insurance the opportunity to have that insurance. That would be a bad outcome, right?
Yeah.
So Jamie, we'll complete testimony. We could decide to adopt your proposal, that a third option, the state rule, and then if later we do some more homework on this and find out there's some problem that we didn't understand, we can walk it back. We could change the ordinance.
Yes, completely.
Okay, hold on. Lydia's got a question or comment.
Hypothetically, we adopt the third ordinance. We do a little bit more research. We decide to walk back and renege on that. How is that going to affect, say, Kathy Fitzpatrick and the other lots? Like, how is that going to affect them?
Well, that would be part of the analysis if we would thinking about walking it back. Right?
Yeah, is that going to affect their homeowners insurance and all that by adopting and then deciding against it?
So that would be part of the work if for some reason we don't like what we decide tonight. So. Okay.
Yeah, if I can speak to that question. So right now, I hate to say this, but I've gone through three different federal government FEMA, employees that were fired. And so after I feel like the dust settled, there would be more of an opportunity to get a FEMA representative or somebody from DLPD to come to the city council to discuss these issues. Because we're all kind of, we're working in uncharted territory right now. And this is a federal mandate, and so that's why I push it for you guys, so that your citizens or your residents have access to that funding.
Yeah, as you said, the Trump administration could change this over time. So, well, listen, it doesn't sound like there's harm if we were to decide to adopt as you're proposing. We could do that. It's a safety valve. We could walk it back. Do we? While we think about that, I want to complete the hearing, Jamie. So, Todd, you do not have testimony.
That's kind of my concern. I was not given the right documents, so I have no idea how this affects me. Well, I would have a notice, but I don't know. I'm unable to research it. I researched the wrong stuff. I had this other TDL thing, not the floodplain. And another comment is, I can't find these 100-year flood maps on your website, the county's website, the state's website, or the federal website.
Yeah, we got to get that from FEMA. Yeah. Because there's been versions that have come around in the last 2 years, because I've seen where you can look at the wastewater treatment plan. I don't think there's anything in the wastewater treatment structurally, anyway, properly. Okay, Jamie, let me ask Jane. Jane, do you have testimony one way or the other to give, or you just had the questions? And...
Sarah has been talking. I'm in that position as well. I haven't done full analysis, but what I've done is to kind of understand that. And I was willing to, put up for
But what I understand is that the option three, from what I understand, is that that gives pain understanding to review things. Because the truth is that all of us who receive these notices, it's sort of random and it doesn't make sense. And then we have to like fight a lot of things. However, if we have a city, then looking at all of this within this big plane, we can reason with our city and there can be jurisdiction. I like feel that that's a super good option that gives our city power to review each case independent of mapping, which is archaic, which doesn't make sense, which is random, and the 17 of us that receive these notices are not going to be the ones who are going to be flooded. And so that's a whole other battle, but at least if Article 3, Option 3 is adopted, city can go, oh, yeah, that's true. You're not
going
to be flooded, so we're not
going to. Anyway, keep the decision making local. Okay. Jamie, do you have anything else to offer? I'm going to close. We'll close the public testimony at this point and any further deliberation on the council. I think what I'm concluding is we go with Jamie's recommendation for now. Adopt her proposal, option three, and if we find there's egregious problems with it down the road, we'll address the new ordinance. Meanwhile, as Amy said, who knows what the federal government's going to be doing there. So people, it seems like we've got head nods to do that. Jamie, can we at this point take a motion along those lines and take a vote?
Yes. If the city council does not have any other questions, and if there are people in the audience or on this call that would like to provide comments, and thank you, Jane, for your comments and your understanding, then yes, the city council can motion to close the public hearing and continue deliberations. And in deliberations, you can still ask questions of me. But it's just between you and me and no longer any public comment.
Okay, so we've closed the public hearing.
Hang on. Wait. Can I have one more comment?
Oh, okay, go ahead.
I mean, like I said, I know nothing because I was provided the wrong information by the city. I assume you guys must have information to fully understand what you're voting on and making a decision on. It seems like it's an emergency, but she said she can't find anybody at FEMA that's going to enforce anything. They don't even know if they're going to work tomorrow. So it doesn't seem like it's a major emergency to get the data to them because they're all fired into chaos. So could it be extended a little bit so all the affected citizens can and the council can fully be aware of what they're voting on?
So I guess the flip side of that, Todd, is there is some risk. Somebody may lose their opportunity for flood insurance along the way if we don't take action. There's some risk there. Maybe the authorities give us an extension. So that would be a bad outcome. Whereas if we adopt this, as Jamie said, and we're all acknowledging, we could revise it later if we need to.
Remember, we're choosing the most open-ended.
Is that what it is? Yeah, the information is not what I got. I
think it keeps our options open going forward. We can modify it later.
And that's not the one that's going to cost me $25,000 or whatever to.
Right, that was option one.
Correct me if I'm wrong, the city assumes the burden of cost for the consumer, right?
And that's Jane's point. So keep the local, the people that know our town, and we're going to listen to the citizens. I think this is kind of low risk at this point. It's better to not take the risk of denying somebody floodplain insurance if we do the wrong thing as a local government. So it makes sense to me, Todd. So are we ready then to we close the hearing portion. I guess one question is, what kind of additional homework should we do on this? Maybe we can sleep on that, Andrea, think about that. But if we adopt this now, we adopted it. So any further deliberation? Would anyone care to?
I'm sorry, Mayor Witt. I'm sorry, I called you Mayor Witt. Mayor Anderson. if there is clear direction from the council on what should be researched, I am more than happy to do that for you guys. So I'll end it at that.
I think what that is, Jamie, is a crystal clear delineation of what property is affected. The 17 people that are noticed, what's potentially affected structurally or non-structurally. And the people that just had, Charlie's got shrubs up against the creek, is he going to be impacted in some adverse way? Or, and then where is that 100-year floodplain? There are maps out there.
A legible map would be nice. These are.
Yeah, they're available. So, Jamie, I think those are the things for clarity, and as Todd says, so the people over notice have the right and best information. I think that's where we could do some more work.
Yeah. And to follow up.
That's awesome. And yeah, and I can follow up with you on those items. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can do that.
I'd be happy to work with you. I think I understand enough to be able to delineate, okay, what do we need to do to make greater clarity? Go ahead, Charlie.
And just a question, if say this, we get down the road and then the city engineer goes to a property to establish their floodplain their floodplain status. If the city engineer, for example, I live on Mosier Creek, I have a 100-foot cliff off the back of my yard. If that was to flood, the water levels would have to be so high. Jane, close for public, please.
Yeah, Jane, please.
But if the city engineer comes up to a property, say, such as myself, for that, can the city engineer then submit something to FEMA and say, you guys need to recalibrate your floodplain map? Because we're going to take the time to
city engineer. It's called a map correction. It's been in your guys' code for, I think, since the 80s. So it's called either a plumber or a loaner, where you're like, hey, there's this. Obviously, I'm 100 feet up, like, why am I included?
Yeah.
And then in coordination with the Division of State Lands to get you removed. But yes, map revisions are definitely a part of this ordinance.
Okay, cool. Thank you, Cody.
Map question number three, because that was part of my question, which Charles was making, is that it's the land of arbitrary point. And only the city of Mosier can look at this and decide who's going to realistically flood. You're going to be a pain
in the ass.
Get that in.
Thank you, Jamie. Jamie, a question for you.
Yes, sir.
Jamie.
Yes.
We're calling for the second reading. We did the first reading. It's written up in the second reading.
I'm sorry, Rick. I can't hear you well.
So Gene, he's actually referring.
What?
Jamie, can you hear me?
Please.
Is this the?
He's actually referring to what?
To Jamie.
Jamie,
the city planner.
Oh, sorry. Jamie. Yeah, sorry.
Jamie, is this in fact the second reading?
Yes.
Are you asking Jane Elkins' question?
No. Jamie Crawford. Jamie, please go on.
Okay, thank you.
Jamie Crawford.
The loser?
This is the first reading of this ordinance.
So what I was given was the second.
So you have a script, you have a script.
My concern is that if this is only the first reading, then we won't have the second reading until the next meeting, and then we're going to be
right. So we can do a first and second reading during this meeting. That's what Jamie informs.
Okay.
Isn't that the reason why it's as a declaring emergency so that it can be done?
Yeah, that's a vote reading. Declaring emergency to meet the federal mandate of adoption of the ordinance. Okay, so that's why we need to do it for a second. Okay, we need the title. We have the title. You do it? Okay. All right, so we're going to entertain the motion.
All right, so I move that the council approves the first reading by title only and adopt ordinance 203. And the title is An Ordinance Adopting Flood Hazard Regulations that Reflect the 2024 Oregon Model Floodplain Management Ordinance and Declaring an Emergency to Meet State and Federal Mandated Adoption Deadlines.
And then the second reading.
Do we need to
make motion to adopt
it? Okay, the second.
I'll second that.
Okay, Brenna seconds, all in favor? All in favor, okay.
That was amazing, but actually the first reading needs to be in full.
Oh, right.
So sorry.
Okay,
that's short.
All right, we'll redo it. Ron?
The whole thing?
Yep.
All the whereases and everything?
Good, then I'll know what we're voting on.
It's not that long. I don't really care for it.
Would you like
you're
to
fine.
To
No.
I'm so sorry.
Okay, hey, let's bring order so we can wrap this up, please. Focus.
I'll have someone for it.
Mayor Anderson, I'll be reading it.
Okay.
All right, so an ordinance adopting flood hazard regulation that reflects the 2024 Oregon Model Floodplain Management Ordinance and declaring an emergency to meet state and federally mandated adoption deadlines. Whereas the United States Department of Homeland Security or Security's Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, and the Oregon Department of Land Conservation and Development, DLCD, have directed cities to adopt either a biological option or the 2024 update to the State of Oregon Flood Model Flood Hazard Ordinance to regulate development within flood hazard zones before July 22nd, 2025, and whereas the city has chosen to adopt the 2024 update to the State of Oregon Model Flood Hazard Ordinance, and whereas the City Council held a legislative public hearing to discuss and adopt the 2024 update to the State of Oregon Model Flood Hazard Ordinance, and whereas Exhibit 1 contains the City of Mosier's 2024 update to the State of Oregon Model Flood Hazard Ordinance, and these regulations will be standalone and not part of Mosher's zoning ordinance, Title 15. And whereas an emergency exists so that these regulations must be in place to meet the state and federally mandated adoption deadline of July 22nd, 2025. Now, therefore, the City of Oregon ordains as follows, Section 1, Adoption of Floodplain Regulations. Exhibit 1 contains floodplain regulations. This exhibit is adopted as part of this ordinance. Section 2, effective date, the city declares an emergency and the regulations of this ordinance shall become effective immediately.
I see.
Title only and adopt ordinance 203. and the title is an ordinance adopting flood hazard regulations that reflect the 2024 Oregon Model Floodplain Management Ordinance and declaring an emergency to meet state and federally mandated adoption deadlines.
A second?
Second.
Gary, second.
All in favor?
Okay,
all in favor.
Great. Thank you. Before we leave this topic,
this meeting is being recorded.
My record is
before we leave this topic, Todd, what was it? I'd like to understand what you were sent. What, who sent what to the 17 landowners? Did Amy, did you send that out? Did Jamie?
It was sent out by
Jamie. So I'm confused about what Todd got.
Todd was. Got, well, I went to ask. Did I talk to you? Amy sent me this. Amy sent me City of Mosier, Mosier Creek, and Rock Creek, the TMDL. When I asked for the, said I got the, that's why I'm so confused.
No, I received. We just asked me about the original flyer that we received in the mail.
I received the flyer in the mail. I went into the office to ask, what's this all about? And then that's where I got.
The TMDL.
Yes. Correct.
If I remember correctly, you said TMDL and floodplain, and I must have confused it.
I don't know where I got. I don't know where I got TMDL.
Okay. And the only reason I'm pursuing this, do we need to send something else out to people that have already gotten some information?
I don't know exactly what was sent by Jamie's office.
Can you guys follow up with Jamie Crawford on that tomorrow?
It was just that there was going to be a change, is the notice I got.
Okay.
Jamie
can
answer that now.
Jamie, did you hear that?
So if I could speak to that, and I'm so sorry, I had to disconnect and reconnect, and I caught the tail end of it. So anybody who received a notice received from the state of Oregon, it's called a Measure 56 notice. There was a ballot measure, I think in like 2004, that said any regulation change that would or could influence your property value, those property owners need to be noticed. And so, because the city has always had a floodplain permitting process and has always regulated stuff within the floodplain, those owners that are still within that floodplain were not noticed. However, the people from this new mapping that like got caught in their new, sort of direction of mapping, those individuals were noticed and provided that legal language under ORS 197. I hope I answered that.
So Jamie, the correct information was sent out then.
The information was sent correctly. I did not get the additional, upon requesting further information about the ordinance and various things, that's what I've got them all.
So we don't have anything to do. Okay, thank you. All right, moving on, we're gonna wrap up here. Announcements, a few. First, a big thank you to Noah. Noah volunteered to step up and be put on the NACAD board. You guys called a few weeks ago.
Wonderful.
Jessica and Ben came and asked if we had someone, and I sent you guys all an email and no response. So thank you, Noah.
Yes.
That's good for us. Cool. Good for NACAD. Joint Use Facility, the committee met last week and took stock where we are. We did not get the $2.5 million we thought we could get through the House bill or through the Christmas Tree Capital Construction bill. Meanwhile, Representative Greg Smith to our east recommended that we make a request to the Oregon Emergency Board, which is the legislature, the makeup of legislators. So just today, we sent a letter to the board asking, trying to make the case. And the other suggestion that came from Senator Bonham and Representative Helfrich, who came to our joint use committee meeting last week here in this room, was that we consider once again going to the short session
this starts next January. So the committee, Todd, myself, Ron, and Ron Miller with Colleen's help doing the work, has tasks to do. And one of those tasks is to delineate very specifically all the funds that have been provided and have been committed in terms of sunsets or strings attached and what have you. So we know if we don't have any other options, what are we left with at this point in the process? So the committee's going to be doing probably, Todd, I'd say, within the next month again, unless some of this homework has been done and talking about where we're going next. Anything to add to that, Ron?
Maybe the objective there is to be able to start a parallel plan of alternative concepts of a facility based on the amount of money that we actually have. Not committing to that, but just starting to look at that option.
Or a phase, or like some sort of phase of how.
Yeah, and phasing has big implications on like $1 million from that Merkley got us through USDA, probably lose that at government qualified. But anyway, yeah, that could be a concept. I wanted to mention that Andrew's got a request that like Jamie Benham was getting prior years for water supply to residences outside the city of the Mosier Valley. So I think Andrea and Amy are working on a fee schedule if we were to elect as a policy matter that we're willing to provide water to those outside the city. There's a lot of implications there. But anyway, I think that's something that we need to bring back to council maybe from June in the next meeting.
In August.
Yeah. So a policy.
Yeah,
go ahead.
So I've been, you know, I've had a few inquiries, and one is a local person wanting to provide a lot of services for folks struggling with their wells, and another was a contractor, and Waterway already has been doing this as a courtesy to very limited. So we want to provide an opportunity for a local business to be able to get water and do it safely and make sure that we have a way to move forward with that. And we'd like to do it as quickly as possible because there are folks in the valley right now that are asking for this service.
Can I ask kind of what capacity you supply water? Like, is it to like individuals like drinking water, or is it someone who's got like a crypto farm that needs milling?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, this is for residential
okay.
use and fill cisterns and water suppression. And then for local contractors who are doing dust mitigation.
Oh,
yeah. Yes, correct. So, Lydia, you bring up a great point. There's elements of a policy. We need to develop a policy. Is it just for residential use?
Yeah.
Who can put their hands on our hydrants to get
mm-hmm.
water? What kind of liability protection do we need? What's an appropriate fee schedule? Andrea and Amy have been working on that, looking at other fee schedules. Because there's a lot of costs. It's not just the O&M and the future maintenance of the system. There's staff time that goes into this. So they're looking at, you know, what's the purpose. So all of that needs to be built into a policy. But to me, you know, our water system's for the city. However, we are a bigger community.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, to the extent that we can provide water without detrimental effects to the city users, and we can recoup the appropriate cost to pay for that, it's a reasonable thing.
That is, but then there and again, if these fees that we're paying for our water bills are being calibrated on our total water, you know, I don't know where, there's no water meter on that, I guess, so we aren't,
yeah.
it's not necessarily changing.
No, go ahead, Gary.
There's an outfit that would come to the Hoover, City Hoover Public Works Yard and fill up like three or four times a year tanker trucks. And they pay a commercial rate for the water. There was a meter attached to the fire hydrant, and along with the back, proper backflow prevention. And also the critical thing that turned out being making sure that these people know how a water hydrant or a fire hydrant actually operates.
Right. So,
because people have the idea that you can throttle the flow by using the valve on the fire hydrant, without realizing there's a drain hole that's live shooting water straight down.
Yeah, so I mean, certified, we have to have certified individuals, but we have to recoup the costs.
Yeah.
And we already, Andrew and Amy are talking about commercial use versus residential use in different ways. So
sure.
To your point, Charlie, it cannot be a detriment to our system for the city. So anyway, that's, yeah, I just wanted to make you all aware, because I'm getting a lot of calls and questions. You know, send them to Andrea. It's an issue here in our broader community. Okay, last thing for me, and then I'll see if you guys have updates. But Andrea, let's talk a little bit about the next meeting. So are we planning one meeting in August, or?
Well, that was the idea, to just do one meeting in August. And right now it's scheduled for the 6th, which is just 2 weeks away from today. And there isn't a lot on that agenda yet, but the TMDL, the hazard, yes, that's the one.
Yeah, that's important.
The little one. So that's the main thing on the agenda that I can think of right now.
So in regard to two things we talked before. Our charter says one meeting one. I think we all agree if we can do one meeting one, it saves a lot of staff time, our time, makes things more efficient. In those months where we have too much business, maybe we have two meetings, so I'm assuming you guys are all good with that. And the second thing is, let's try and keep Amy apprised if we know our travel schedules, you know, we're going to be out of town. Do that as soon as you know, if you're not going to be here on the 6th, let her know right away in case we need to have a quorum, we need to go to the 20th.
And then to avoid rescheduling things, do you think that the 6th is the best day for that meeting, or would you rather have the 3rd instead?
Yeah, that's a good question. How are you guys? One better than the other?
Sorry, so would either be the 6th or the 20th of August?
Either the
6th is better for me.
Yeah, that's fine.
Six. Okay, is that good for you, maybe? Is that too tight?
Well, it isn't. I mean, we'll make it work. But we have to work. There's not another, we didn't have to rearrange this hearing for the
ordinance.
We don't have any hearings or any notices to do, so, you know,
Maybe could we shoot some NHMP and the closure addendum? We need to take action on that. Could we shoot to maybe have at least a draft of water policy?
Oh, yeah.
Fees?
Yes.
Yeah, that would be another good agenda item. Anything else? Okay, that's it for me. Andrea, anything for you?
No.
Anything else? Lydia?
I guess I have one thing. It's just everybody needs to, you know, it's our small community. We need to keep our eyes open and support our safe community,
yes.
Especially after how worse it seems. You know, we have had several run-ins, not run-ins, but we've had a lot of people dumping garbage,
mm-hmm.
and we're really trying to come up with a solution for that, and it's really catching them. That they can't continue, you know, doing that. We looked up an ordinance. The ordinance says that, you know, we allow trash to be put in public receptacles, but when they're full, people need to be smart to do something else.
Okay. Amy, how about Rock Creek Pay passes come in?
They still have not been received. They were supposed to come in today. Per John's conversation with the salesperson that they've been working, I didn't see the mail today, crossing fingers for tomorrow, checking the mail daily.
Okay.
So.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you, Amy. Thank you, Andrea. Thank you, Jamie, if you're still on, Monica. This meeting's now adjourned at 8:13.
And with regards to Rock Creek, because we do not have passes scheduled for this month, we would like to close the gate and just have it available to programs and current payrolls.
Yeah.
I kind of switched the weight, the pendulum, the little drop.
I was going to ask you about that.
We'll get some
ask that to be the eager head we can. Emily needs you, Tobias. Your daughter needs you.
What you need to do is go upstairs right now to the fire. And I'm going to go home and pick up some folks. And you're not going to tell anybody. You're not going to shoot.